Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Monday, the 19th of April, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 33 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to continue the examination that we began last week of astrology. Could the positions of the sun, moon, and planets actually affect human affairs down here on Earth? Well, that's what we'll try to find out. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at a new documentary from the United States, The Most Dangerous Man in America. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. And let's start once again, as we have for many weeks now, by heading to Argentina. Now, I had been using the metaphor of a roller coaster to describe the ups and downs in the fight for marriage equality over there. But given everything that's happened over this last week, I don't think the roller coaster analogy works anymore. Unless it's a roller coaster that's run off its rails and crashed into a fireworks factory. Basically, total confusion reigns. Okay, so at the point where we left off last week, Argentina's first lesbian couple had just got married, becoming the third same-sex marriage in the history of the country. The first same-sex marriage was still intact, although the second one had been annulled a few weeks earlier. Well, what a difference a week makes. Basically, everything has been turned completely upside down since then. The first dramatic step took place last Wednesday, April 14th, when a judge in the southernmost province of Tierra del Fuego declared that the first same-sex marriage that had taken place in Argentina back in December between Alex Freire and José María Di Bello was now null and void. Incredibly frustrating. These guys had been the first ever same-sex couple to be legally married in all of Latin America. So what does that mean now? Are they still the first, even though their marriage has now been annulled? I don't know. Then, the very next day, Thursday, April 15th, the fourth same-sex marriage in Argentina's history took place in Buenos Aires, between Carlos Alvarez and Martin Canevaro. Now, like the other three marriages before theirs, they had received a court order a few days earlier requiring the registry office to marry them. So that was a bit of good news. Meanwhile, at the very same time that their wedding was taking place, two separate committees within the Argentinian Congress were discussing a marriage equality bill. And at midday, both of them recommended that the bill pass to the floor of the Congress to be debated. So that debate should now begin in the lower house within the next 2 weeks. Of course, this doesn't mean that the bill will be passed, but it will certainly be debated very soon, and a number of the main parties do support it, apparently, so let's hope that that support is enough to get it approved. So that was the situation on Thursday. Then on Friday, more dramatic news. The first marriage between two women that had taken place just 1 week earlier, on April 9th, the third marriage in Argentina, that's the one we'd reported on, well, that same marriage between the two women that we reported on here last week, that marriage was declared null and void also by a judge in Buenos Aires. Can you believe it? Incredibly disappointing. So, the situation that we're left with today is that four same-sex marriages have taken place in Argentina since December. The first three have now been annulled by various judges. Only the most recent one, performed last Thursday, remains valid. But I'm sure that those guys must now be a bit nervous and worried that theirs will be annulled in the coming days as well. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, a marriage equality bill is about to be debated in the Congress, and from what I understand, there are now over 60 separate marriage equality cases before the courts in Argentina, including a number that are working their way up to the Argentinian Supreme Court. So at this point in time, it's a total mess, with some judges ordering same-sex marriages to be performed, other judges then annulling them, and no guidance from the higher authorities. This will, of course, all eventually be resolved. Let's just hope that that happens soon and that such a resolution comes down in favour of marriage equality. Whatever happens, you can have no doubt, dear listener, that we will keep you well informed of every painstaking and painful detail here on Reality Check. Now, briefly in other news, let's head north from Argentina to the United States, where last Thursday, April 15th, President Obama issued a directive requiring all publicly funded hospitals to extend visitation rights to the partners of LGBT people and to respect the patient's choice about who can make critical health care decisions for them, including their same-sex partners. Apparently, this directive will cover almost all hospitals in the US. So this is obviously a very positive move for LGBT people in the United States. Although some commentators have pointed out that this was a pretty easy way for Obama to score points with the LGBT community, while not really upsetting the right wing too much, because this is not really an issue that they feel very strongly about. Although, have no fear, dear listener, some right-wing groups in the US have come out to say that this is just another attempt to, quote, undermine traditional marriage. Well, you've got to give them points for persistence, I guess. Other commentators have pointed out that this directive is actually not such a big deal because most hospitals already respected the rights of same-sex partners to visit their loved ones and make medical decisions for them. But all that said, I think this is undoubtedly a positive step forward, though a relatively small one for LGBT rights in the United States. And this directive from Obama was apparently inspired by a particularly cruel and nasty case from 2007 in which a woman, Janice Langbun, was prevented by hospital staff from visiting her partner as she lay dying alone in a hospital bed in Florida. The two women had been together 17 years and had 4 children. In fact, after signing this directive, Obama telephoned Janice to let her know about the new measure and to apologize for the behavior of the hospital. Maybe he's just playing politics, but still a very nice gesture, I reckon. Okay, that's all the LGBT news we have time for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we return, we'll get into a skeptical analysis of astrology. Are you surprised about the directions your life has been heading in lately? Could it all be a result of the positions of the planets at the moment you were born? Well, to find out, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, award-winning radio.
All day, all day, all night. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman, and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Khuda Jaane from the 2008 Bollywood movie Bachna E Haseeno. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to continue the examination that we began last week of a very popular form of pseudoscience, astrology. Now, last week we didn't really get into a skeptical analysis of astrology, but just discussed the fundamental principles on which it's based. But if you missed last week's episode and would like to hear what we talked about, you can download the podcast from the Reality Check website. That's realitycheckonline.net. Now, before we dive back into the topic of astrology, I should mention a few emails that I received over the last week, a couple about astrology and one that has nothing to do with astrology. So let me start with that one. That email came from Ted Cox, who's a journalist in the United States, who thought that Reality Check listeners might be interested in an article he's written, available online, about gay conversion therapy. Ted is actually straight and an atheist, but he went undercover to investigate some of those gay-to-straight conversion ministries that seem to be so popular in the United States. And I have to say, the article is definitely worth checking out. Just let me read here a quick excerpt from the first page to give you a flavour of the piece. I don't remember exactly when I felt his erection pressing into my back. I sat on the floor between the outstretched legs of a camp guide, my head leaning back against his shoulder. The guide sat behind me, his arms wrapped around my chest. This hold was called the motorcycle. Five men surrounded the two of us, their hands resting gently on my arms, legs, and chest. And the story goes on to explain this and other surefire techniques they use to turn a gay man straight. So if you want to read the whole article, just do a Google search for Ted Cox, that's C-O-X, My Journey into Manhood. And thanks, Ted, for letting us know about the article. Very enlightening. Now, one of the other emails I received this week was from a listener called Harry Canassa, who is a skeptic but knows a lot about astrology. And Harry wrote to elaborate on a few of the basic points I made on last week's show. Now, I actually made a deliberate choice last week not to get into too much detail about astrology because it's a very complicated subject. And I just wanted to give a very broad overview of the basic principles common to all forms of astrology. So I won't read all of Harry's email, but he does raise a number of interesting points, and I want to mention one of them quickly here. He points out that in ancient times, the appearance of certain constellations in the sky was very important, not so much to the astrologers of the community, if there were any, but because they were an indication of natural cycles on Earth. Maybe that certain fruits were about to come into abundance, or certain animals were about to return from their migration. The appearance of certain constellations also indicated things like when to sow seeds, when to harvest crops, and when the river was about to flood. And Harry states in his email, and I quote, "So the ancients would have made the connection between the constellations that appeared at certain times of the year and the natural rhythms of nature, and seen a causal connection. It's not too hard to imagine that if the stars can influence nature, then why couldn't they affect the affairs of men and or their personality?" Indeed, a very interesting point. There would seem to be a causal connection between what was happening in the heavens and what was happening in nature here on Earth. So thank you, Harry, for bringing that to our attention. We always love receiving emails from listeners, so please keep them coming. Now, just quickly, one other request from a listener, Carl, came in asking us basically how the most popular form of Chinese astrology works. You know, the 12 animals of the Chinese zodiac that change every year. You know, the pig, the rabbit, the dragon, etc. Well, that system is not based on the position of the sun at the time of your birth, like the Western signs of the zodiac, but rather on the position of Jupiter in its orbit around the sun, which takes about 12 years. So, if they say you were born in the year of the tiger, for example, that's because Jupiter was moving through the tiger section of its orbit at the time you were born. Alright, so there the emails out of the way. I did just want to make a couple of other preliminary points about astrology that we didn't get into last time. Now, one important thing to remember about astrology is that when astrologers say that Saturn is entering Gemini or Jupiter is moving into Aries or whatever, they're not talking about a real objective phenomenon. The planet Saturn is not really entering anything. It's just doing what it does, continuing in its orbit around the sun. It only looks like it's entering the constellation Gemini when seen from our vantage point here on Earth. In fact, the constellations themselves are also not some kind of objective phenomenon in space. For the most part, the stars in any one constellation have no physical relation to each other. A constellation is only a description of the pattern formed by a handful of stars when seen from Earth. For example, the stars in the constellation Gemini could be hundreds of light years away from each other, some close to Earth, some very far away. They don't have any kind of physical connection to each other, except that they happen to appear close to each other in the line of sight when seen from the arbitrary position of the Earth. And one final preliminary point on astrology. Now, I mentioned that I don't want to get into too much detail about some of the complexities involved in making astrological observations. But let me just give you a brief idea of how some of those complications arise. First, observations of the stars are made more complicated by the fact that the Earth is not only going around the sun, but it's also rotating around its own axis every 24 hours. So without instrumentation, that actually makes it very hard to notice differences in the positions of the constellations from night to night. The stars move across the sky every night from east to west, just as the sun does during the day. So it's actually hard to notice differences in the positions of the constellations when everything is moving all the time. Also, the fact that the Earth has an axial tilt of 23.5 degrees also makes things quite a bit more complicated. And I haven't even mentioned terms like the ecliptic or the precession of the equinoxes, or the differences between tropical and sidereal astrology, but I really don't want to get bogged down in all those details because, well, they're not necessary to understand the basic principle of all astrology, and that is that 7 celestial bodies, the sun, the moon, and the 5 visible planets, all appear to move in relation to the fixed and unchanging constellations. And these movements supposedly affect human affairs here on Earth. Okay, so now that we've finished dealing with the emails and the preliminary stuff, let's get into our skeptical analysis of astrology at last. And let's try to answer the question of whether there really could be anything to that basic principle of astrology, that the positions of celestial objects have an effect on human affairs, and that they have a particular effect on you at the moment of your birth, influencing not only your personality, but also the direction your life will take. So, as we've done with many other forms of pseudoscience here on Reality Check, let's do this in a two-step process. First of all, let's look at the theory behind astrology to see how plausible it is in the light of everything we know about how the universe functions. Then, regardless of how plausible it turns out to be, let's look and see if astrology actually works in practice. Can you actually use it to predict future events or determine things about someone's personality? Okay, so let's go through the first step first. How plausible is the theory behind astrology? Well, to tell you the truth, there's actually not much theory behind astrology. Astrologers generally simply assert that the positions of the planets have an effect on human affairs, and very rarely do they ever get into an explanation of how they might be able to have such an effect. But let's try to help them out here and suggest some possible ways that the planets might have an effect here on Earth. Well, there are really only two possibilities, because there are only two forces that could work across the vast distances of space. Either astrology works through gravity or through a magnetic field. So let's look at gravity. Gravity is dependent on mass. So a massive planet like Jupiter, for example, exerts a very strong gravitational pull on everything around it. So could the changes in Jupiter's gravitational pull as it moves across the sky have some kind of effect here on Earth? Well, it's true that Jupiter does have a lot of gravity. But it's also true that Jupiter is very, very far away, about 600 million kilometers, in fact, at its closest point. And as you probably remember from high school, the strength of the gravitational field diminishes rapidly the further away you get from the object, according to the inverse square law. So, although Jupiter is very massive, it's so far away that its gravitational effect on any object here on Earth is minuscule. So minuscule, in fact, that at the moment of your birth, the gravitational effect on you from the doctor in the delivery room is estimated to be 34 times greater than the gravitational effect on you from Jupiter. And even if you wanted to try to explain astrology using these tiny gravitational effects from the planets, well, how would it work? Okay, let's accept that the gravitational effect changes ever so slightly. So what? How could that tiny change in gravitational pull have an effect on human beings, on events in their lives and their personalities? I don't know. No one has ever suggested any mechanism for how this might work. And another thing, even if you could think of a way in which tiny variations in gravity did affect human lives, well, given that just rearranging the people and the furniture in the delivery room would have more gravitational effect on your body at the time of birth than any effect from the positions of the planets, well, it's hard to see why the planets would be relevant rather than other factors here on Earth. Okay, so maybe it's not gravity that explains astrology then, but what about the magnetic fields of celestial bodies? Could they possibly give astrology some grounding in reality? Well, once again, the magnetic fields of the planets, well, the ones that have magnetic fields, are so minuscule here on Earth as to probably be undetectable, because they're just so far away. The object with the largest magnetic field in the solar system is the Sun, and its magnetic field can indeed be detected here on Earth. And it does fluctuate in strength and even reverses itself about every 11 years. So could this be the explanation we've been looking for? Well, the problem is that astrology is all about the relative positions of the heavenly bodies, and the fluctuations in the Sun's magnetic field are not in any way related to its position or the positions of the planets. And even if you could come up with some explanation for how changes in the Sun's magnetic field could be related to the movements of the planets, well, once again, we come up against the same question we faced with gravity. How could changes in the Sun's magnetic field affect human affairs here on Earth? Especially considering that human bodies are electrically neutral and so not affected by changes in magnetic fields. Just like with gravity, no one has ever suggested a possible mechanism for how the Sun's magnetic field might affect humans in any way, let alone determine their personality and the course of their lives. So, at the conclusion of the first step in our analysis of astrology, it would seem that things are not looking too good in terms of the plausibility of any theory that might be used to back astrology up. In fact, one would have to conclude that what little theory there is behind astrology is implausible in the extreme. Okay, so maybe it's completely implausible, but astrologers have never worried too much about that. Their response is simple. I don't know how it works, I just know it works. So this brings us to step two of our analysis. Is that true? Does astrology in fact work, despite being completely implausible? Well, there's a pretty easy answer to that question. No, it doesn't. There have been a lot of studies on astrology performed over the years to try to find out if it works. In fact, too many for me to go into them in any depth on tonight's show. Basically, these studies normally involve getting a group of volunteer subjects and a group of astrologers and seeing if the astrologers can accurately find matches between the dates and times of people's births and their personality traits. One famous study performed by Australia's Geoffrey Dean, a former astrologer now turned skeptic, involved just such a technique, using a group of test volunteers who were either extremely introverted or extremely extroverted. The astrologers had to try to determine who was who, just from their dates and times of birth. And guess what? The astrologers did no better than chance. They could have just been tossing a coin. And there have been other important studies. The Coulson study in California, the Nanninga tests in the Netherlands, and many, many others. And whenever carefully controlled double-blind studies like these have been performed, they have always shown that astrology has no correlation with reality. It simply doesn't work. So what would be the reality check final conclusion on astrology? Well, given that any scientific basis it could possibly have is completely implausible, and given that there is no evidence that it does in fact work, one would be pretty safe in concluding that most likely astrology does not work. And the planets just go on doing their thing, orbiting the Sun without affecting humans in any way. But if that's the case, why is astrology so popular all over the world? Why do so many people believe in it? Well, we've looked at similar questions for other types of pseudoscience here before on Reality Check, and I want to look a bit more at that question next week. What kind of cognitive biases do people fall into that cause them to keep believing in astrology when there's absolutely no basis for such a belief? Now, unfortunately, we don't have time to look at that question today, so if you want to learn a bit more about how people can be fooled by astrologers and also fool themselves, tune into Reality Check here on Joy 94.9 at 8 o'clock next Monday. But before we wrap up, let me make one final comment about astrology that I've been thinking about a lot over this past week. It's always useful to keep in mind that the principles of astrology, and indeed of the world's great religions, formed at a time when people believed that the Earth was at the center of the universe. Now, think of the dramatic change in our understanding of the universe that has occurred since then, and really just in the last few generations. The turnaround has been absolutely profound. When the ideas of Copernicus began to take hold in the 17th century, suddenly the Earth was no longer the center of the universe, but orbited the Sun. That had an enormous impact on how humans saw themselves and their place in the universe. And then also to discover that all those twinkling stars up there were not just rocks or planets reflecting the sun's light, but were in fact other suns. So now the sun is not even the center of the universe, but just another star among thousands. And then think of the discoveries of just the last century, that the sun is not a star amongst thousands, but one amongst hundreds of billions in our galaxy, and that there are in fact hundreds of billions of galaxies. So we've gone from being creatures living in the center of everything to being just unimaginably tiny specks in a vast, vast universe. And we've only known this for the last three or four generations. Edwin Hubble only confirmed the existence of other galaxies in the 1920s. Throw into this mix all of the discoveries of Darwin, that we and all other species were not made by some loving God, but just evolved over billions of years through natural selection, and you can see that the shift in our understanding of ourselves over just the last 400 years has gone through the most profound and fundamental change imaginable. No wonder it's taking a few generations to get used to these new ideas. And when you look at the theories of astrology, or when you look at all the holy books of all the world's main religions, they make much more sense if you remember that they were all written at a time when it was believed that the Earth was the center of the universe, and that human affairs were the primary matter of interest in the universe. They seem to make much less sense today, given everything we now know. And to cling on to those ancient beliefs, after everything we've learnt since Copernicus, Darwin, and Hubble, seems to me quite ridiculous. Okay, that's enough on astrology for today. Let's take a break, but first, if you have any questions or comments about astrology or anything else we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, at gmail.com. You can also visit our webpage too, that's realitycheckonline.net. All right, let's listen to our final song, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, award-winning radio.
Hey there, I'm Adam Lambert, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. Now, the song you just heard there was Percaya by Indonesian group The Rain, from the collection of the latest Indonesian hits I just brought home from Bali. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movie up for review this evening is the highly acclaimed documentary from the US, The Most Dangerous Man in America. And this movie seems to be loved by the critics. It currently has a rating of 100% on the Rotten Tomatoes website and a score of 76 on Metacritic. It was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Documentary this year, but unfortunately lost out to The Cove, which is that dolphin documentary we reviewed here on Reality Check last year, and which, in my opinion, is deeply flawed. But I wouldn't say that about The Most Dangerous Man in America. This film definitely deserves the acclaim it's receiving. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb here and call it Reality Check's second must-see movie of the year. I really enjoyed it. The Most Dangerous Man in America tells the story of Daniel Ellsberg. Who's Daniel Ellsberg, you ask? Well, Daniel Ellsberg was the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers to the US press back in 1971. And I have to confess, although I'd heard about the Pentagon Papers as part of the lead-up to the Watergate scandal, I really didn't know much about the whole affair. I think for Generation X's like me, who didn't live through those turbulent times, we don't really hear about it much anymore. And that's one element that made this film so interesting for me. I learned a lot about this important event from recent history. The film interviews Daniel Ellsberg and a number of other people and goes through all the events leading up to his decision to leak the Pentagon Papers to the press, and the subsequent uproar that it caused, including, ultimately, the downfall of Richard Nixon. The Pentagon Papers was the name given to a massive 7,000-page, top-secret study commissioned by the US Secretary of Defense at the time, Robert McNamara, and drafted by a team of military analysts at the RAND Corporation, where Daniel Ellsberg was working. The papers were a detailed examination of the United States' involvement in Vietnam from 1945 to 1967, covering the presidencies of Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson, and showed a clear disjunct between what the Defense Department and the president knew at any one time and what they were telling the American public. The Pentagon Papers made it very clear that all those presidents had knowingly lied to the public about the US involvement in Vietnam on numerous occasions. Perhaps most notoriously and fatefully in 1964, following the Gulf of Tonkin incident, when President Johnson claimed US forces had come under attack and essentially used that attack as a justification to escalate the Vietnam War. The papers also revealed the secret carpet bombing of Cambodia and Laos, although how you can keep carpet bombing a secret, I'm not quite sure. But apart from the details of the whole affair itself, what makes this documentary so interesting is the candid and heartfelt interviews with Daniel Ellsberg, as he describes the changes in thinking that took him from being a hawk supporting the war in Vietnam and actively working within the Defense Department to make it happen, to becoming one of its staunchest and most vocal opponents. And he remains an anti-war activist to this day. The moment in the film when he describes his emotional breakdown after meeting a young man who was going to jail for 5 years for draft dodging is very moving. Ellsberg also makes interesting observations about the psychology of people working in organizations like the White House, the Defense Department, and the Rand Corporation. How they can get so caught up in the macho culture and the politics, and not wanting to lose the respect of their colleagues, that they are capable of making decisions that have hideous consequences in the real world. Consequences that, when seen in retrospect, they are appalled that they were somehow responsible for. The documentary also interviews a former member of Nixon's so-called White House Plumbers, the team responsible for the Watergate burglaries and other crimes, Bud Krogh, and he makes a similar observation. He realizes now how terrible the things were that he was doing, but he was just swept along basically by peer pressure at the time. The other extremely interesting observation that Ellsberg makes is about the fallout from the whole Pentagon Papers affair. After he'd managed to leak the papers to newspapers all over the country, as well as to several US senators, all while on the run from the FBI, and after all the revelations, he was then tried for a number of serious federal crimes. He faced the very real possibility of spending the rest of his life in jail. And he makes the comment that after all this huge effort and the risk that he'd taken, and given how damaging and revealing he thought the Pentagon Papers were, he had the impression that the American public just read them, understood them, and then just went on with their lives. Nothing really changed. In fact, a year later, in 1972, they re-elected Richard Nixon as president. Ellsberg felt that after all he'd done, everything he'd sacrificed, nothing had really changed. It appeared that the American people, whom he'd tried so hard to help, to open their eyes to what was really going on, well, they just didn't really want to be helped. It seemed they just kept on believing what they wanted to believe. Of course, this is not completely true. The whole Pentagon Papers affair and the Watergate scandal in the years that followed did severely damage the credibility of the US government and created a lot of distrust and cynicism in the American public concerning their leaders. It opened wounds that have never healed. Although maybe Ellsberg has a point. The fact that the most recent Bush administration was able to lie to the public and then start a war on the basis of those lies and get away with it and get re-elected does make you wonder how much things have changed. But in my opinion, The Most Dangerous Man in America is definitely a film worth checking out if you get the chance. I'd put it up there with documentaries like The Fog of War, the Errol Morris film about Robert McNamara, and also documentaries like Manufacturing Consent, the one about Noam Chomsky. Actually, it probably comes as no surprise to learn that as a fellow anti-war activist, Daniel Ellsberg is in fact a good friend of Noam Chomsky. And he was also a friend of the late historian Howard Zinn, who also appears in the movie. So, The Most Dangerous Man in America now goes up there along with Shutter Island as a reality check must-see movie for 2010. Do check it out if you get the chance. And that brings us to the end of the 33rd episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for episode 34. Coming up next, David presents An Awkward Pause. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.